Blog Talk Radio.
Last night I saw a lunar eclipse in the sky, and something happened in my mind's eye. I saw you in a whole different light. Clearly, really, it's not that I want you to change. It's more that I want you to stay the same.
Oh, and I do want you to stay the same. I want you to stay right here. Welcome to a little radio show I started a dozen years ago that's now called Read My Lips. I'm Bonnie D. Graham, a.k.a. Radio Red. We had a little echo from the theme song there. She just likes to sing. What can I tell you? Read My Lips is a show about people, about life, about health, happiness, wisdom, whatever. We're all here. Let's make the best of it. Let's do a better job of being alive. I have three very interesting guests. I have a feeling that my second guest has just shown up, but she's on a restricted line, so I can't read her phone number on the switchboard. But I'm going to tell you, we have a show about living healthier, living happier, living in a fit way so you never have to diet again once you figure it out. This is all related to the mind body connection. I know you've heard the phrase. You may not know exactly what it means. I have some experts who are going to talk to us about that. We're going to find out ways to change in a good, positive way and understand our control over our lives a lot better. And then we're going to wrap up at the end of the show with how you can go from middle class to millionaire, controlling the health of your money, of your wealth, of your outlook. We're going to find out, what is wealthy? What does it mean to me, to you, to my special guest tonight? I'll give you their names right here at the top. My first guest is Dr. Pradap Singhal, and his book is Live Healthier, Live Happier. And I think he has a new title, which we will find out in just a couple of minutes. It's Health, Happiness, and You. I'm looking right at it on my show page. Second guest, I think that's Teresa on the line. Teresa, raise your hand, do something, click something so I know if that's you. Teresa is the author of, well, she calls herself the lady with the pants because here she is. Let's see. She's coming on. Teresa is the lady with the pants. Her book is Love Your Life, Eat Well, and Never Diet Again. And let me see if we've got her. I don't have her yet, but I know she's coming on. And my third guest is Frederick J. Bart, Middle Class to Millionaire, Make Your Move. We've got great information. Let me do my shout-outs very quickly because I know Dr. Singhal is waiting, chomping at the bit to come on and talk to us about health and happiness, which he knows an awful lot about. Shout-outs to my Lorna, my Dune, my Kaylee, my Big Kahuna, my ballerina, and my artist. I'm glad many of you got together in Boca this weekend. I know you had a wonderful time together. Joe, congratulations on your new video, and I hope you do great at the open mic tonight. We have a bunch of celebrity birthdays. Wah, wah, wah. Let's see. Yvonne Lendl, the tennis player, was born today in 1960. Tammy Faye Baker, well, some of you will remember her as talk show host. Some of you will remember her as the wife of a disgraced minister. And some of you will remember her as the lady with the eyelashes. That's how I choose to remember her. Michael York, the actor, born today. Michael Eisner. Sound familiar? Yeah, CEO of Disney Company. How about Willard Scott, the TV weatherman? How about Frank Morelli, the jazz musician? Today is also the birthday of Lord Snowden, who is a photographer and the husband of Britain's Princess Margaret. How about James Broderick? I think he had an amazing TV show on when I was just a little girl. Anna Magnani, the actress. Maurice Ravel, the composer. Yes, I played some Ravel, I think, when I was studying piano. Pete Mondrian, the cubist artist. And Luther Burbank, the naturalist. A special hello to Cousin Freddie and greetings to the Seattle Moose and the Seattle Chicks. Without further ado, I'd like to welcome my first guest, the one and only Dr. Pradap Singhal. You're a medical doctor. You've been practicing for 45 years, and your new book is Health, Happiness, and You. Welcome, Dr. Singhal, to Read My Lips. How are you today?
Thank you, Bonnie. Thank you. Pleasure is mine having me, giving me the opportunity to be on your show.
Well, you pursued me at the publicity summit. You said, I'm the happy man. I can tell your guests how to be happy. Let me come on your show. And I said, fine, I'll make you happy, so come on the show. That was months and months and months
yes,
ago. And here you are. And, you know, I love your new website. And I'm going to call you Dr. Singhal, correct? Is that how we
sure.
should?
That's good.
Okay.
That's nice. Yeah.
The headline on your website says it all to me. It's happiness is the juice of life, and juice is in red. That, to me, is an amazing thing. Happiness is the juice of life. Tell me what it means. I know what it means to me, but what does it mean to you when you pick that for your website?
See, if you are not happy, your life, you're missing the real lifeboat. If you see people who are unhappy, they're really not enjoying their life. They're just living. It is, to me, like if you take a lemon, has no juice into it, or you take an electric wire which has no electricity flowing through it, it is just like that. It is the happiness which gives energy, the spirituality, and the mental strength. That
now
is what I mean by juice.
Let's
of life.
Talk about how much control. This is a point of very, very great interest to me. I don't want to go right into my biggest question, which really is, if people have illness in their life or they bad things befall them, a bad stroke of luck. I want to know what you think of that concept, Dr. Singhal. But if people have something happen to them, can they just say, I'm going to be happy and get past it? But let's start a little somewhere else. Mind-body connection. Why don't you explain to us, how much control does our mind really have over what happens to our body? That's my first question to you.
Absolutely. Mind has a total control on our body. If you have if your mind is balanced and controlled, not only you can deal with the diseases and situations comfortably, but you can also make the things better. As people who have a total mind control, for example, yogis, it is known that they do not breathe for months. They do not have to eat for months.
Wow.
They can walk on the ice. It is the mind control. Of course, it is not easy for an average person to reach that stage. But if you have a mind control, you can make a big difference in your life. No matter what situation you are facing, but it is how we perceive the things. Condition, diseases, would and the will attack you, attack any person. But how you will be interacting, how you would be reacting to that situation would make all the difference.
Okay, now let's talk about difference in parts of the world, if you will, please. Western civilization. I think we're spoiled rotten. I think we're sissies. We're babies. A lot of us are weak. We expect a pill for everything. We expect a therapist for everything. We expect we're a me generation across the board, and a lot of people just don't want to do the work. From your point of view, from what you've studied in mind-body medicine and conventional and Eastern medicine, do you think people can really learn to take the kind of control over their bodies that you say is possible? Is your philosophy for the average person?
Of course, it is very easy as long as one is willing and one is committed. Even if you just read my book, it tells you how to control your mind, how to strengthen your mind, and how to balance your mind. If your good life is the product of how balanced your mind is at any given time. If you are balanced, your mind is balanced at all the time, you would enjoy the life of bliss at all the times. That is
now,
typical
how do you define delightful bliss? I love the idea of bliss. To me, bliss is, I'll tell you what my definition of bliss is, would be sitting in a park on a hill with little buttercups growing around me in the grass, and looking out over beautiful trees and seeing a lake in the not-too-far distance and having somebody I love sitting next to me and a warm spring-summer breeze and maybe a little picnic lunch next to me, no music, no noise, no radio, no TV, no cars, and just feeling like I'm at peace with myself and at peace with nature and I'm blessed to just be there. That's the kind of day, to me, that would be blissful. Does that fit your definition of bliss?
No, that's not true. This is a peace. You know, you will have a peace of mind. Peace of mind is very, very different from balance of mind.
Okay.
You have that, you are enjoying those moments because you have such a good circumstances and of your dream, and you're enjoying them. How long would you be staying in that park and how long you would be able to enjoy those scenes. But that is not real life. In real life is you have to go to work, you have to deal with the boss, you have to deal with
the
employee.
You betcha. Yes. Okay.
So when you can deal with those situations in a similar manner, then your mind is at balance. When you are happy, when you have $1 million, but you are also happy when you're just making your both hands meet, that is the balance of mind.
Is that bliss? Bliss is when you have that balance, when you can have bliss at any time. You're saying it's not just saved for the beautiful day in May in the park and the grass and the sunshine. It's you can have bliss every day.
That is true. That is very true. See, it is. I am no exception. I go through all the pain and suffering like anybody else. I'm a human being, but I have controlled my mind. I always stay calm and cool, staying thinking that these are the normal variations, normal ups and downs of life. I'm no exception. I am not being picked up by God to punish me. It is the way the life goes with anyone.
Interesting. Interesting.
Did I answer your question?
Yes, you did. Now, at what age can somebody start to learn to control their mind and control their body? Is your book, your philosophy, your way of life, is this something we would teach to our children? Is this something you have to wait till somebody is 18 to say, now sit down, I'd like to tell you how it's really done? When do you introduce this philosophy and this concept to your children?
Never too early. Never. My parents were very happy people. They were very balanced people. And they taught us to stay in balance. If anything went wrong when we were even children, they say, well, this is a part of life. You learn to live with this. You're going to destroy your life on this event? That's your choice. Or you learn to accept and go ahead, go further. Go in the future.
Okay, so we're saying that you can change your attitude. I've read this many times. I've had many guests who've said this, that an event is just something that occurs. It's up to us to decide whether we say, I'm devastated, it's hurtful, OMG, oh my God, I'm never going to be able to do X, Y, Z again, or say, you know, I got to move on. This is not what I want. It can't destroy me. I'm going to stay a happy, balanced person. So do you think all of us are really capable of knowing the difference that we have that control?
Of course. That's what I believe. And that's what I teach. I'm a happiness coach. I teach happiness to my patient. It is easy. See, I have changed the life of many patients by just giving them some insight into the situation. I can give you some concrete examples.
Please do. I'd love to hear them. Yes.
Just one little sentence can make a difference of a day and night.
Okay.
I had a lady come to me. She's a 57-year-old lady. It's a very very typical case. I'm giving you just because of that. I will make it very short. She come to me because she was depressed. She said she has a difficulty sleeping. I said, what is the problem? She says, I am depressed because my job is killing me. I ask her, explain to me about the job. She says, up till now, I was the manager in my kitchen. She is a cook, and I'm the best cook. But now some company took over, and there's a new chef, new in charge, new manager, and I am working under him. He has hired a lot of girls, and when they come to the kitchen, he works with them. When I go in the kitchen, he just walks away and go to his office. I said, so it is bothering her. I said, why it is so? Did you ever think? She said, no. I said, maybe it is that you are the best cook and you don't need any help.
Right.
She said, you think so? I said, yeah, that's what I think. I don't know. So she come to me next time, and she said, I'm the happiest girl. I went to the boss and I asked her, why don't you help me? Why you help these young girls? She said, you don't need my help. You're the best cook I ever have. That one sentence changed her life. She does not need antidepressants. She does not need sleeping pill. Just giving a little insight into the situation. You know, they can give you another example, if you would like.
Yes, another example, please.
Yeah. I have a lady come to me, and she's sad and depressed, and I ask her what is the situation. She tells me whenever my husband is very critical of me, whenever I go home, he always calls me, you're fat and ugly.
Ooh, that hurts.
And I said, "This is they have been married for 35 years." I said, "That's really rude." And I told her, "Listen, when he asks you next time, you look at his into the face and ask him, don't look at my body, look into my eye, look at my heart, look what I have done for you." And when I saw her on my next visit, she tells me, "My God, that changed my life." When I told my husband what you told me, first he got stunned, he became speechless, but after that he never used those words again.
Mm.
And it made her so happy.
I can imagine it would have made her happy. Well, we have a lot of people in our culture, men and women, who are verbally or emotionally abused, and I put quote marks around the word abused because it means a lot of things to a lot of different people, by uncaring, harsh, impatient, nasty, cold, unhappy people. And they can become the victim and not know that they can speak up or speak back or set their boundaries. So it sounds like your teachings are very important. I'm looking, when I met you and I said to you, "My goodness, your book is over 500 pages. How am I going to read all that?" You said to me, "Turn to page 334. That's all you need to know." Well, I did read a lot more than just 334, I promise you. But we just have a few more minutes. Why don't we talk about, you say here on page 334, personal experiences and favorites. The following are some of the points that have helped me the most. They are for your consideration and thoughtfulness. And you're so polite, by the way, in your book. You're so respectful of the reader, and I appreciate that. You say they may or may not be acceptable to you. One is acceptance. Probably one of the best lessons in life. Everybody is okay. You and I are okay. Everything in life is okay. Everything that will happen or is happening is also okay. Every situation and every life event is okay and is part of life. Nothing is that good or that bad. Accept and relax. Can you embellish on that a little bit?
Sure, sure. See, this is a lesson taken from Bhagavad Gita. This is the essence of Vedas. Veda is this is the Bible of Indian Hindus. And let us take one word at a time. And everybody is okay. So we have to believe and accept that everybody is okay. Mm-hmm. They may not be as educated, they may not be as rich, they may not be well-dressed, they may be coming from they may be from low social background, but they are okay, they are people. And they are in one stage of development. One day I was a high school kid, one day I was a college student, one day I was an MD. But all these things, we have to accept all the people at all stages.
Okay.
Secondly, everything in life is okay. Now, something goes, if I fail, it's okay. I try again. But if I fail and I just give up, then it's not okay. You have to keep trying.
Okay.
Everything that will happen or is happening is also okay. See, these things puts your mind at ease, puts
mm-hmm.
your mind to understand that all the life events are normal, whether it is up is down, because life is never at keel. It's always something going on. If something does not go on, actually, it would be more, it's like a twilight zone. It would be all dull. Life is an action, and something will be always happening, whether it's good or it's bad. It cannot be always good. It cannot be always bad.
Okay, so that's part of the balance then. Now, the question for you is, and I think Teresa is trying her best to call in, and she keeps disappearing, so we'll give her another couple of tries. Other than that, we're going to move to Fred, and then we'll see if we get Teresa on later. Question for you is, I alluded to this in the beginning when I welcomed you, Dr. Singhal. The question is, if people are befallen by disease, I'm talking cancer, I'm talking crippling arthritis, I'm talking heart disease, I'm not talking lung cancer from smoking where it's something they did, I'm talking if somebody gets one of the big major diseases that are the major killers in the Western world, how can you say, "I'm a happy person, I'm going to just heal myself"? Is it that simple? Can you just sit down and say, "No doctors, no medication, no therapies, nothing, I'm just going to say I'm a happy person and I will be fine and eradicate the disease"? How does that process work?
Oh, see, my message is that you should be happy when you're sick. The message is keep your mind calm and cool. try to understand your disease. If you have to die, nobody can stop you. If you have a cancer, nobody can stop you from dying, most likely. But how you deal with that event at that given time, it makes a big difference. For example, a person who is totally unbalanced, who probably will drive himself crazy and drive his whole family crazy.
Right.
But a person of a strong mind and balanced mind will stay calm down and will understand that he had to die and the time has come to say goodbye. And learning to accept death is also part of balancing the mind.
Interesting.
Because nobody can live forever. But
this is true. Not yet, anyway. Not yet. But if you're telling us that happiness is the juice of life, a happy person should be able to live forever. What do you think of that?
That's very true. See, we believe that our body, anything in the universe is made of energy. Anything. There's nothing in the universe which is not energy. I am energy, you are energy, my mind is energy, my spirit is energy. And by definition, energy does not die. Nobody dies, actually. Nothing
okay.
dies. You cannot destroy electricity. You cannot destroy magnetism. You cannot destroy water because these are energy. These can be transformed into one thing into another. Similarly, we believe in Hindu philosophy, when we die, we really do not die. We transform our body into a newer body. Our mind, we exist at three levels, physical, mental, spiritual. Physical level is the one you only see. Physical level is consists of five elements, and that includes ether, water, fire, and minerals.
Right.
All these elements, after you cremate the body, become part of this universe. And the spiritual element and the mental element stays as untouched, and they go and constitute a newer body. So it is really a transformation of the body into another body. If you read the chapter Energy in my book,
right.
I explain how exactly this is happening.
Well, I have to tell you that we're going to add some new energy to the conversation because I see my second guest, Teresa Ayala, is on the line. I'm going to bring her on in a second. She's been trying valiantly to get through, and we finally got her phone number here. But, Dr. Singhal, I'd like you to tell people what website you'd like them to go to so they can learn more about you and your book.
Okay, my new website is Your, Y-O-U-R, Happiness, HAPPINESS, Coach, COACH, .com. One word, no breaks.
One word, yourhappinesscoach.com, and that's where people can see, they can buy your book, right?
They can buy the book. At present, the book was released only a couple of days ago, the new book. The old book is not available now. But
okay.
If you can buy the book today from booklocker.com.
Lovely.
But within a week, it should be available at Amazon, Barnes & Noble. But today you can buy from booklocker.com.
Well, congratulations on your new book, and I'd like you to help me welcome Teresa Ayala. Hi, Teresa. How are you?
Hi, Bonnie. How are you this evening?
Fine. Valiant, we finally got you on. We've been waiting with bated breath, hoping you'd come on. I'd like you to say hello to Dr. Singhal, who is my first guest. I don't know if you two met before. Have you?
No. Hello, Dr. Singhal.
Hi, Teresa. How are you?
Well, what both of you have in common is...
You.
Yes, what both of you have in common is the body-mind connection, the idea of controlling what you're thinking so that you can control how you're feeling and what you're doing. And Teresa's beautiful book is Love Your Life, Eat Well, and Never Diet Again. And Dr. Singhal, the reason Teresa is known as the lady with the pants is that she used to be what we commonly call morbidly obese. And she saved the pants that were from her largest size. Teresa, how big were you in pounds at that time? Can you share with us?
274 pounds.
Okay, so you've got a pair of jumbo pants here. And what Teresa loves to do is bring the pants with her, Dr. Singhal, so everybody sees her walking around holding these rather large jeans next to her, and she's now a size 2, rather gorgeous, very healthy, and she's been healthy and slim for a long time. So you're the lady with the pants that you no longer have to wear. That's what size were they? Were they 26, did you say, in the book?
They were 26, 28, and today I'm a size 4.
Oh.
Yeah, I heard you say 2.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's wonderful. So we're going to turn the time over to you now. Dr. Singhal, I'm going to leave you on the line. I'll leave your mic open, and we'll be talking to you again, so don't go anywhere, okay?
Sure.
So we're going to pay some attention to Teresa. Teresa, your book, Love Your Life, Eat Well, and Never Diet Again. How sure are you that we're never going to diet again because you believe in the energy, you believe in the same thing Dr. Singhal does, the body-mind connection? Tell me your philosophy and what really worked for you finally, Teresa.
Well, the thing is, how this actually started out is also so not only was I morbidly obese, I was smoking a pack and a half of cigarettes a day.
Oh.
And I needed to, you know, I knew... in my mind, it wasn't a debate for me. It wasn't, would I get cancer, would I get lung cancer from smoking cigarettes? It was something that I just knew. Like you could look at the back of your own hands and say, yes, clearly, those are my hands. I knew that if I didn't quit smoking, I was going to be diagnosed with lung cancer.
Mm-hmm.
So what I did is I came up with a method that would work for me because I tried everything that was out there. And the thing that I figured out that what I needed to do was to give myself, in between the times that I set up for myself to smoke, to give myself something constructive to think about.
Okay.
So not allowing myself anymore to kind of get into that whole internal debate with myself about, oh, I really want to have a cigarette. It's sort of like the devil and the angel, if you will. So you have the
mm-hmm.
devil on one shoulder telling you, oh, come on, it's just one cigarette. You know, we'll quit tomorrow, that kind of thing. And you sort of have this internal dialogue going on. And what happened ultimately was that, you know, every time it ended up stealing my ability to be able to quit smoking cigarettes. And so I came up with what I call thinking distractors. And by using those thinking distractors, I was able to keep my mind on the things that were important to me and off of the things that, you know, that were obviously hurting me and hurting my body. So once I was able to quit smoking using this method, 3 years later when I decided I wanted to take the weight off, you know, again, I tried a few different things. I tried a few different diets, and then it occurred to me.
What did you try? Teresa, can you give us – I know you're probably going to have to mention brand names, but that's okay. What did you try? And I know you believe that not all diets are created equal for everybody. So what did you try, and what was your experience, just briefly?
Well, you know, it's been 16 years since I quit smoking and 13 years since I tried to lose the weight. And off of the top of my head, I do remember trying Weight Watchers. I remember going to their meetings. And I would say that I really love Weight Watchers. And the one thing I love about their program is that they don't tell you that you can't have certain things. And that's something that
right.
I'm also very, I'm very, you know, I don't believe in telling people, if you tell me I can't have pizza, I'm going to have pizza for dinner, I'll have it for lunch.
Of course. It's like prohibition, right? You can't drink.
Exactly.
Okay, start making gin
exactly.
in the bathtub, for God's sake. Right. Okay.
So I tried some, you know, different things that were around at the time, and it's hard for me to remember, other than Weight Watchers, what
okay.
I tried. And then it just occurred to me, it was kind of like the light bulb that went off, that my obesity and my weight problems were not that different from my smoking addiction. And I just tweaked my quit smoking program and was able to use that to lose the weight. And I still use it. I mean, this is how I live my life now. It's, for me, it's about the choices that I make every single day, because my body could go right back to being that obese person again.
See, that self-knowledge is very important. That self-knowledge,
yeah.
Because I've been through Weight Watchers and lost 40 and put it almost
mm-hmm.
all back on once I finished, because I said, oh, I'm invincible. I'm indestructible.
Yeah.
I did
yeah.
it. My God, you know, nothing
exactly.
can gain weight. I'm not going to put pounds on. And,
yeah.
you know, 4 years of chocolate later, here we are,
I know.
Trying other mm-hmm. things. And I do want to talk to you about I'm wearing one of those metabolic monitors on my arm, and I loved seeing that in your book, and I want you to share with people what those are for and what they do. But I also want to ask you to tell us a little bit about the distractors concept, Teresa. How did you come up with them? What is a thinking distractor? How quickly do they work? And I know Dr. Singhal was talking about training your mind to accept events
mm-hmm.
and to have a balance. So are the
mm-hmm.
distractors the balance part against the, damn, I want that chocolate cake and I want it all and I want it now? Is a distractor really going to derail you from going in the fridge and taking that cake when nobody's looking, Teresa?
Well, you know, regardless of whether someone's looking, the whole point of the thinking distractors is to keep you thinking and keep you really keep your mind focused on the things that you want, about your goals in life, about what you really want from you. And it works for me. And, you know, when I came up with this idea at the time, they weren't called thinking distractors. You know, for me, I was really trying to develop something that would work for me. And I was basically training my mind. So say I had an hour to get through to my next cigarette, or an hour and 10 minutes, whatever, to get through to my next meal. And I would start to have those cravings or start to feel like, oh, I'm hungry. Maybe I was bored, but I really wanted something to eat anyway. You know, because a lot of times we're eating, we're smoking, and it's not because we even really want to. It's because we're doing it out of boredom, frustration, anxiety, whatever it is. And these thinking, in my mind, you know, you've got to focus your thoughts on the things that are important to you and keep them off of, you know, the things that are doing you damage. And that's why in my books I came up with these thinking distractors that you can use to get you through to that next smoke time or to get you through to that next meal.
Okay, so you're saying here, I'm going to read briefly from page 41, Thinking Distractors. This is chapter 10. Eating a meal takes approximately 7 to 20 minutes. And we all know how that feels when you spend 8 hours cooking for Thanksgiving and it's done in 20 minutes. Hello. Depending on the speed at which you eat, how fast and how quickly you chew. Note the time you start eating and pace your eating pattern to make your meal last for at least 22 minutes. So let's say you have your meal at 20 minutes after the hour at 3:20 p.m. By 3:42, you are finished. Depending on your habits, your urge to eat may return at 4:20, which is exactly an hour after you started eating.
Right.
To get you through the next hour or to your next mealtime, use the thinking distractors as your lifeline. So give us an example. What would my first distractor be, the first tool in my toolkit, shall we say?
So off the top of my head, I'm thinking of the – so there's different thinking distractors for different weeks, and there's one that's more aimed at kind of being more creative and – because the thinking distractors are all different. Some are for goals. Some are for life direction. And I'm thinking off the top of my head the creativity ones where I mentioned that – one of the things you could consider, so maybe you've set some goals for yourself and you said, you know, by X date, I want to be 20 pounds less, we'll just say that.
Right. Okay.
And then I would challenge you to think about how someone like Walt Disney or someone like Thomas Edison or some famous person that you know that achieved really great things in their lifetime, if they had that same goal, what might they change or what might they add? Just to give you a different perspective and to keep your mind open to the fact that, you know, we don't have to be so rigid. What if it was Albert Einstein? You know, what would he do to get through to that next hour? What would he intone into, you know, your goals or your objectives in life to sort of, do you see where I'm going with that?
Mm-hmm.
It's really the whole point of the thinking distractors is to keep you focused on the things that are important and give you some creative ways of thinking about things. And I will tell you that what used to happen to me is say it was 20 after the hour and I had my cigarette, and 20 minutes later I wanted another cigarette. So I would say to myself, all right, I need to focus intently on, and it might be, what would Walt Disney do, or what would Albert Einstein do if he was trying to?
He was trying to
get to these goals that I'm trying to do. And the thing that used to happen to me is I would get so caught up in the thoughts and thinking about the whole thing that, lo and behold, I'd look back at the clock, and not only had I made it to my time, I made it 20 minutes past my time. And that was kind of the cue for me that I said, you know what? This really works. This really works.
And I'm going to ask Dr. Singhal to make a comment here. Any thoughts for Teresa's wonderful method? Please, I know you have something to say. Go ahead.
Sure, of course. You know, she using the distractors. That's very good. And distractor is what? It's a thought process, and thought process come from the mind. So she is using the mind to use those distractors. See how the power of the mind is working on her weight or smoking or addiction?
Yep, and it's controlling the body. It's basically distracting the body from what the body is convinced it wants. So what you're doing is you're taking out the emotional component of the body's, shall I say, knee-jerk reaction. Damn, I haven't had a cigarette in 18 minutes. Where is my cigarette? You're saying, we've got something else to do. We're going to be busy thinking about something else, and maybe you won't miss it. And you found Teresa over and over again. You didn't miss the food and you didn't miss the cigarettes. Is that right?
Yes. And you find that you really can get through the hours that make up the day and the days that make up the week. And, you know, that's what it's about, is getting your body and your mind to adjust that. I remember sitting waiting for a taxi and thinking to myself on one of my quit dates, what the heck do people do when they're waiting?
Yeah.
Well, you know, you would sit and wait, and maybe you could think about some things. But for me to sit and not smoke a cigarette was completely foreign to me. Just like as would be someone who's completely obese, not eating a really huge meal would seem completely foreign to them.
That's right.
But your mind and your body will adjust over time. And that's where you get to real change. You know, when you look at the statistics, about 7% of the people who try to quit smoking will succeed over the long term. That's from the Center for Disease Control.
That's very, very small.
Yeah. And it's the same for weight loss. It's about 5 to 7% of the people will succeed, you know, that the people like me who...
And you're a 5%er.
Yeah, exactly. That, you know, I've kept this weight off for 13 years now. And part of the reason that people keep going back to smoking, going back to gaining that weight, is because they never get to that real change. You never really change the mind.
Now, I'm very intrigued with your process for the distractors, Teresa, because when I opened up the book and read this chapter, I did read your book all the way through, I said to myself, oh, it's probably... what do we call it, a mantra, or it's probably an affirmation, I will lose the weight. You're not saying that. You're saying, are you passionately curious about something? Spend time right now and focus intently. See yourself pursuing your passion. What does that feel like? So you're saying go somewhere else with your mind. Don't just repeat something. Don't just write circles on a blackboard for 20 minutes till the urge to smoke. Don't go out and, you know, get a manicure and go talk to the lady next. You're saying do a little work, do a little thinking, and basically, I'm going to go out on a limb on this one, take a vacation from the negative thoughts. I know the doctor will appreciate that. Take a vacation from the damaging negative thoughts and give yourself a chance to think about refreshing or empowering or dream-enlivening thoughts. Give yourself a little vacation from your own head trips and take a trip.
That's a really wonderful way to sum it up.
Yeah, thanks. That's what it says to me. Now, we have about 3 minutes left before Fred calls in, but what I'd like to do, and Dr. Singhal, I haven't forgotten about your song. We're going to play it in a couple minutes. We'll play it just before we bring Fred on. But, Teresa, tell everybody, please, what these metabolic monitors are like. I've had one on for about a month, and I got it through one of the weight loss programs, which I don't follow anymore, but I plug it into my USB port about every 3 days.
Yeah.
And it tells me all the steps I've taken, all the exercise, the level of exercise, how many hours or minutes of sleep I've had, and how many calories I burned every single day.
Yep.
Now, how did you first find out about this, and where do people get this kind of thing?
I'm trying to think of where I first found out about it. I'm not quite sure. It may have been, you know, Bonnie, I really don't know. I've been using the pedometers and you know, the metabolic monitors for so long now, I really don't know where I got the first one. I've been through a few, I can tell you that much.
Okay. I'm on my first, and it's been about a month.
Yeah, the whole thing with that is that it just gives you hard evidence of the work that you're doing. So if you're a really inactive person and you start to pick up your activity, you're going to see it there on your screen. And that, you know, having something real. And if you can manage to start doing some activities with your friends, that helps too, obviously. One of the things that I've been doing as far as, you know, speaking of friends and social networking, I've been going out to basically any place that will have me, and I'm giving my books away and asking people to, like, I would give it to you, Bonnie, and I'd say, you know what, Bonnie, use this in good health. When you're done with the book, write something in it. I left some pages in the back to reflect on things. And then give it to a friend who you think could benefit from the book and ask him or her to do the same and sort of circle it in your circle of friends. And then when the book is sort of like the traveling pants, but this is traveling lady ripped pants.
Yeah,
so,
and you're not going to pass your 274-pound capacity pants around, but it's the traveling book. I must mention you also, in addition to Love Your Life, Eat Well, and Never Diet Again, you have Tobacco is a Killer, Your Guide to Quitting, which is based on the same system.
What I wanted to offer is, I'm not sure how we could do this, Bonnie, maybe you can tell me, is I wanted to give away 20 books on the show. If, you know, the first 20 people come to my website, or I'm not sure how we could do that, maybe the first 20 people that email you, I can mail the book, and then they could do that and actually circulate the books amongst their circle of friends. And I'm hoping to, inside of a year, 6 months to a year, to pull together a documentary, because I feel like there's some value in the social networking and sharing experiences, because you're not alone in this.
No, very nice. And we have to tell people your website, because it's time to bring Fred Bart on. So where should people go to read about you? And do you want them to go to Lady with the Pants or Teresa Ayala? What's your pleasure? What's your preference?
It's ladywiththepants.com. That's all one word. So ladywiththepants.com.
And that goes to your fullname.com, correct?
Yeah, it goes right to my website.
And that's I'll spell your name for everybody. It's TheresaAyala.com or ladywiththepants.com. And you can see the pants there. She's holding up the pants and her gorgeous size 4. You're 4, you said, right?
Yes, I'm a 4.
You're gorgeous. Look at those legs. OMG, OMG. You're a hot mama here. You're a hot cookie. And your system is called Fruition Health, and that's your email as well, fruitionhealth@yahoo.com. I'd like you to both help me welcome, as soon as I get my cursor back, I'd like you to help me welcome Fred Bart. We're going to bring him on the air right now, and he's our third guest of the day. Frederick J. Bart, welcome to Read My Lips. How are you, sir?
Bonnie, I'm wonderful. And it is a great day to be a millionaire.
I love that. It's a great day. It's a great day to be a healthy, smart, thinking, caring, feeling, sensitive person about what your goals are in life, Fred Bart, because that's what we've been talking about with Dr. Pratap Singhal and with Teresa Ayala. We've been talking about making changes. We've been talking about thinking about your goals, defining your goals, having a start point, making a commitment to change, and changing in good ways. And I think that is, I try to find a theme for every show, Fred, Teresa, and Dr. Singhal, and I think that's the theme for today, is figuring out what you want to do that you're not doing to make your life better and happier. What is your bliss? What is your happiness? And then setting your goal and having a method to get there. Now, whereas Teresa, who is also a nurse practitioner, and Dr. Singhal, who is an MD, whereas they're talking about the health path, we're now going to talk about your financial health, which is also translated into the word, the W word, which is wealth. So welcome, Fred, and why don't you tell us a little bit about your philosophy about what is wealth, and your book is Middle Class to Millionaire, Make Your Move. A lot of alliterations in your book, which I love. So your website is middleclasstomillionaire.com, and I'll have to tell people how to spell millionaire, because I think people like two N's instead of two L's sometimes. Fred, how did you get started? I know you started out as a surgeon, a reconstructive surgeon, and now you reconstruct people's financial health. So time for you to talk. Tell me about yourself.
Okay. I think a lot of people struggle with finances, even those people that aren't necessarily struggling financially. And you know what? What I do ties in absolutely to your two other guests, Bonnie. And in terms of needing a focus, a motivation, a goal, what I encourage folks to do is this. Because saving is hard. Change is difficult for all of us. I encourage people to take that object of their dream or their desire. Perhaps it's a new home or a Bentley or a yacht or you know, just a little Mini Cooper or a new vehicle, whatever it is. Take a picture of that. And I would like you to copy that picture and put a copy up on your computer, one on your refrigerator. Put one perhaps right in your checkbook. And if you even dare be so bold and brazen, actually frame the picture, superimpose your image on it so you can see yourself in the future with this tangible reward for your hard work. I believe that becoming a millionaire, or at least digging yourself out of debt and heading in the positive direction, is nothing difficult. I don't think you have to buy real estate or stocks. All we need to do are simple incremental steps, little changes that make major improvements, whether you're changing your spending patterns, changing your saving habits, doing things that incrementally add up to enormous gains.
Now let's talk about adding up. You have a wonderful, I know it's not yours originally, but you have a wonderful chapter called The Power of a Penny. And a lot of us think, and I'm guilty of this too, Fred, oh, I can get gas at the station on the next corner. We shouldn't be talking about that. We're about to go over the $4 a gallon mark here in Long Island. But and I know that's a sore spot around the country right now. But say, oh, well, I'm only going to get 10 gallons fill up, and I can get it around the corner, well, a mile away, actually, for 2 cents less. So, well, 2 cents times 10, that 20 cents, it's not going to make a difference. Well, on page 20 of your book, you have a chart called The Perception of a Penny. And everybody listen up, because this is beyond dramatic. And, Fred, would you mind if I read the starting, the midpoint, and the end amounts?
No, please do. I think it underscores exactly what we're talking about, Bonnie.
On day one, if you put one penny in a jar, a piggy bank, a box, in your backyard, somewhere, you store it and save it where you know where it is. One penny, that's a penny. The next day you double it, two pennies, and you add it to the first one, so 2 plus 1 is 3. The next day you double it on day three, the 2 cents got doubled to 4, and you add that to the first two, and you get 7 cents. If you repeat that for 31 days, I will take you along. Let's do the midpoint here at 15 days. The 15th day, the amount you have to put into that deposit, wherever it is, has grown to $163.84. That's figure out the pennies on your own, kids. That's how much money you owe yourself on that daily deposit, and added to the other 14-day deposits, you now will have a total of $327.67. And everybody's saying, oh, Bonnie, for God's sake, $327, big, big, big BFD, who cares? Well, I'm going to tell you that if we bump it up to the 22nd day, hold on, you're going to need $20,971.52 to pay yourself. Your grand total is going to be up to almost $42,000, not exactly what we used to call chump change. Let's go to day 28. You will owe yourself $1,342,177.28. How are you doing now? And your total will be $2.6 million. And, Fred, why don't you give what the final total is on day 31?
You know, if you've got a month like March and there are 31 days and you've got an awful big checkbook to fund it, you're going to need to write a check to yourself on the 31st day for about $10.7 million and change, giving you $21.5 million at the end of the month. That
OMG.
Of a penny.
The
a penny
power of a penny. That is extraordinary. Teresa, have you ever heard this way to count pennies before?
No.
Is that wild? Dr. Singhal, you can see how bliss can be defined if you're talking about monetary, right?
Hi, I see that. I hear that. Yeah.
This is Fred's version of health. Now, Fred, let's talk about the relativity of wealth, because you have a wonderful way of saying it. And how do you express the relativity of wealth? People say, I'll be wealthy when I have. What's your formula, Fred?
Okay, you're right. And as soon as you start to chase those intangibles, you never reach them. And that's exactly what I think. I think it's human nature. I believe that wealth is an awful lot like age. No one ever views themselves as wealthy or old. I have many acquaintances that are billionaires. That's right. Their assets begin with a B. And they don't think they're wealthy. Oh, my goodness. I could live off the interest that they earn. They are wealthy by most of the world's standards. Yet they don't view themselves that way. Also,
right.
Many people, even if they're 50, 60, 70, 80, 90, 100, still don't view themselves as old. Our perception of wealth and age changes as time goes on.
So tell me about the two zeros.
Wealth is two more zeros than I have at the moment. You know
what?
If you've got $100 in your pocket and $1,000 in the bank, most people believe that when they get two more zeros, they go from $1,000 in the bank to $100,000 in the bank, they will be rich. But somewhere along the way, they actually had to cross that $10,000 mark in their savings. Now, that $100,000 seems actually a doable goal. It's an achievable reach. So instead, we have to redefine it. No longer will $100,000 make me wealthy, but now I need $1 million. It's a vicious cycle. And actually, I want to parlay into what the other guests have said.
Yes.
Wealth without health is just poverty.
You nailed it, kiddo. You absolutely nailed it. And some people say money can't buy everything. Well, at some point, it can't buy health. But as Dr. Pratap said, and as Teresa said, there are ways of making those pennies in your mind work for you and finding your balance and finding your bliss. But I believe you all have the common thread of you have to set your mind to a goal. And sometimes that goal is going to dance around on the table and you're not going to be sure exactly what it is. So it's all about mind control. And in your case, Fred, the mind is going to control the body, which is saying, okay, and I have to go segue into your next example, which I loved. You go to the store. You say, oh, that dress I wanted that was $200 is now on sale for $75. I saved $125. According to Frederick J. Barth's system, you haven't saved a damn dime until you take the $125 and put it somewhere where it's going to earn money for you. You have just left it on the table, and you're probably going to spend it on something else. So the control would be thinking like a millionaire instead of the middle class mentality. I love the way you weave that in and out of the book, Fred. So talk to us about what do you do to really save? What are the methods for really saving? And was the one I gave the best example?
You know what? If it's not the best example, Bonnie, it's one that people can start to implement tomorrow
exactly.
The next time they go to the store. And, you know, it's not sexy. It's not fancy. It's not going to cause a whole lot of buzz at the water cooler or at the next cocktail party. But let's take that example. So you've got this $200 dress on sale for $75, and you're right. All those folks do is not spend that $125. They didn't really save it. So I'm going to challenge you, if you want to make your trek from middle class to millionaire, to actually save your savings. The minute you check out, I want you to take that $125 and put it in a separate part of your purse or your pocketbook or a billfold or whatever, and carry that home with you. I like to use the analogy that if a child's bank is a piggy bank, an adult's bank should be an elephant because we have just that much more to save.
Mm-hmm.
So I want you to take that. I want you to take $125, and I want you to put that in your elephant bank. And over time, I want you to add another $5 bill to it, and a 20, and perhaps a 50, and a 1 and a 2, and whatever you get as you are saving money. And often this can be done through coupons or specials. So we've saved our savings. We separate our savings at the store. We're saving our savings. Now, this is the crux of the formula. We have to snowball our savings. We can't let the money just sit dormant under the mattress or in the elephant bank. We need to make the money work for us while we're out actually working.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't need to be fancy. Go out and buy United States savings bonds. My goodness, they're available at, you know, banks. They're easy to purchase, easy to liquidate. They're backed by the full faith of the United States government. It's not sexy. It's not cutting edge. It's not trendy. But son of a gun, it's worked for 75 years.
Now, you're talking about the Series Double E, and you're talking about the ones that you buy at 50% of face value. So if you were to buy a, let's say, $100 bond, you would pay $50, and it would mature in 17 years or less. So we've got a plan of looking ahead 17 years. Can most average middle-class people understand waiting 17 years, Fred Barth?
I don't think millionaires can understand waiting 17 years. We live in a McDonald's society. We want our food. We want it now. We want it cheap, and we want it good. But
right.
If you haven't spent that $125 and you bought a savings bond, chances are you're too lazy to go cash it in. So put the savings bond in a safety deposit box and go back next week or the week after and do the same darn thing.
That is funny. You know, Fred, when I was growing up, very middle, probably touching a little toward the upper side in Little Neck, Queens, daughter of a doctor and a nurse, and Dad did well in his practice, didn't set the world on fire, but he made a more than decent living for us, and I grew up well, not wealthy, but well, very comfortable, a lot of advantages, and my parents were very, very gracious to me and my sister and gave us a lot of wonderful advantages. But I remember that the trend, Fred, when you were bat mitzvahed or bar mitzvahed in those days, and we're talking about the early to mid-60s, was to give savings bonds as gifts. That was the rage, not gold bracelets, not crystal, not, you know, trips for you and your best friend to a fancy hotel in New York or to a cruise. People gave you savings bonds. So we accumulated piles and piles of savings bonds. I don't remember when I cashed mine, but I think they were all fully mature. You just stuck them away in a closet or a drawer somewhere, and you waited until one day said, oh, my God, now it's worth $100. I'm going to go cash in. So is that the same mentality you're trying to bring back the savings bond?
Absolutely. Just simple and forget about it. And, you know, if you need it before the 17 years, you can always cash it in.
The penalty is in the first 5 years, correct?
Correct.
If you pay cash, it'd be before the first five. I did read the book. Now, quickly, and, you know, somebody is on area code 586 who's had their hand up for such a long time, but I'm going to spend two more minutes talking about your book, and then we will take a chance and ask them what they want to, if they want to talk to you. Question, you say as far as mortgages go, 15 or forget it. Your rule of thumb is if you can't get a can't afford a 15-year mortgage, don't buy the house. Why is that, Fred?
Because it becomes so disproportionate. And I use examples in the book. But a home is not an investment, okay? A home is a necessity. You've got to live somewhere. We need food, shelter, love, clothing, all those basic things. Your home may or may not make money for you when you sell it. Pumping all this extra money into it in the form of interest is foolish. Yes, you're only making the banks wealthier. I know. April 15th is coming up, and we all get to write off our home interest
mortgages.
It's okay,
right.
Now, if you have a mortgage. I'm in a blessed position. I don't, okay? But you can't convince me that you really need to deduct that 27 to 34% so desperately that you're going to waste the other 73 to 64% just for the sake of extending your payments. If you can't pay for the house in 15 years, find another house.
Okay, now let's move quickly to car buying. You have some very, very interesting things to say about when you sit down opposite the finance manager, the barracuda, it's like do not proceed to go until you pass the office, that neat, tidy little office with the little desk where the person with the fangs and the pointy shoes and the basically the claws sharpened in the form of a pen or a pencil is going to try and take you for everything you didn't realize you came into the car store with. So how do you get around that? What kind of homework do you have to do? If you can just give us a synopsis of your method, Fred.
Save in advance. Very quickly, let's point out a couple things. Most millionaires do not buy a new car. They buy a two-year-old vehicle for the simple reason that a car 2 years old has already gone through 60% of its cash value depreciation, yet has 60% of its life expectancy ahead of it. So the car has gone down tremendously and has a long time to ride. You know what? I followed this advice. When I bought my Maserati, did I buy a new one? No. Could I have afforded to? Absolutely. Instead, I bought one 2 years old. So that in and of itself is good advice. Otherwise, if you've got to finance, it's a bad, bad thing. Cars drop in value the minute you take them off the lot. Now you're just going to finance a sinking balloon.
I have always bought, I used to like sports cars, not the real high-end, but the Zs. I love the Zs, and I would buy them with between 30 and 50,000 miles on them, non-smoking first owner, spotless, clean, had them checked out with one of those guys who comes with the portable, the portable machine, and he comes and looks inside and out and under and writes the report, and I bought them really clean, and I loved them and used them for about another 50 to 75,000 miles, and I bought them used at a good used price. Was that the smart thing to do?
It was not smart, Bonnie. It was brilliant.
You're so sweet. We have 3 minutes left. I see Teresa's back. I'm going to open your line, Teresa. We lost you. Let's quickly find out who's at area code 586, which is your area code, Fred, if they want to talk to you. Hello, area code 586. Your phone number begins with 30. Do you want to say hello to Fred?
Hi, Fred. My name is Mary.
Mary, you have a question for Fred. We have 2 minutes left. I'm going to give you 30 seconds to talk to Fred. Go ahead.
Okay, great, Bonnie. Thank you. Just like you, I read his book, and I follow his posts on Facebook, and I love the advice that he's given. I'm just curious about one thing. While reading his book, I've noticed that it says that credit cards are not bad. Unfortunately, that contradicts most other things I've read. What is your philosophy in saying that they are not bad, Fred?
Oh, boy. Okay, Mary, if you've read the book, you know that in many ways I'm kind of counterintuitive in my thinking and somewhat of a contrarian. I believe everybody should have credit cards, okay? Everybody. Right now, if you're employed and you can go out and get enough credit cards with enough lines of credit to pay your bills for 1 year, go get them. Because when you lose your job, which is certainly possible in a world where we're downsizing and outsourcing jobs, you're never going to get the credit. When you need money most, the banks will shun you the quickest. I say having credit cards is good. Using credit cards is bad, unless, of course, you can pay them off within 30 days. And I put a bunch of money on my credit cards every month, but I never pay a penny in finance charges. So
Me too. I have a zero balance every month. If I can't afford it, I don't buy it. Mary, I want to thank you, and I'm going to invite you to stay on for the big moi kiss at the end of the show. Would you like to join us?
Okay, that would be great. Thank you so much.
Okay, thank you for calling. I hope you'll continue to listen to the show. Everybody, I want to thank you all. And Fred's email, Fred's website is middleclasstomillionaire.com. Teresa's is Lady with the Pants. And Dr. Pratap Singhal's is Your Happiness Coach. I'm Bonnie D. Graham here on Blog Talk Radio. We're going to put Pratap, we're going to play your song on the outro. Would you like that?
Of course, Bonnie. I appreciate that.
There we go. All right, we're going to play a song, and we're all going to take a here we go. Everybody take a deep breath, and you're going to suck in that breath, and we're going to think about the happiest thing we know, and we're just going to do a big shout-out to the world, and everybody do a big kiss that ends with moi. You ready? Here we go.
I am happy.
Mwah.
You are happy. Happiness in my heart.
There's the happiness song. We'll listen for a couple of seconds, and I'm going to stop it. Here we go.
You are happy.
I am very happy to have had you all as my special guests here on Read My Lips. I'm Bonnie D. Graham, a.k.a. Radio Red. I wish you all the best. I wish you health and happiness, whatever that means to you. Find your goal, shoot for the stars, and remember what my special guest said. You can control your life. We'll talk to you next week here on Read My Lips. Love you all.
It's not that I wish we would change. It's more that I wish we could stay the
I mean it. Bye-bye. Mwah.